Georgie Crawford. You're listening to the Good Glow podcast. Over the last year, during my treatment for breast cancer, I've realised the importance of self-care. Whether it's a trip to the gym, a checkup with your GP, or even a 5-minute meditation, the time has come for us to put ourselves higher on our own to-do list. Over the next few weeks, I'll be talking to people who inspire me and remind me to take better care of myself, and people who I believe you, the listener, will benefit greatly by listening to. I'm so delighted to be joined today by the one and only Faces by Grace, one of Ireland's biggest bloggers.
Thank you. That was an introduction.
Thank you so much for coming in. Obviously, we didn't really know each other that well, but we've been in touch a lot since I got sick. You were so supportive of me over Instagram. Thank you so much for that.
I just thought you were incredible, and it was so hard for you to share, but you just did it so gracefully, and I had so much admiration for you as well at the time. And we kind of met before you had your little one as well, and I just thought we had a little bit of a connection, even though we didn't know each other.
Yeah, we had our babies around the same time, and when I worked in Spin, you'd come in on, you know, to talk to the talk show about life, and everything was kind of starting for you at that time, wasn't it?
Yeah, that was the kind of point where I was like, okay, this could go places. So I just went with it then back.
That's a scary thing to do, I'm sure, because, like, I've heard Rosie Conley talk about it before, that she's like, will I go for it? Like, should I go back to my other job? I suppose I first came across you was when you were having baby Sienna, and everyone in the Spin office was like, there's this girl on Snapchat and she's talking about her baby. She's in labor at the moment, and everyone was kind of logging on to see how you were getting on.
Yeah.
Was that the day for you that everything changed?
Yeah, that was, I had been steadily growing, and I was kind of known as a beauty and makeup blogger. And when Snapchat became a thing, I kind of jumped on that to daily vlog, because I was trying to do YouTube, but it's just so time consuming and so hard. So I just picked up Snapchat one day and I never put it down. And one day I went into labor and I was on Snapchat and it did explode that day. My following doubled overnight.
Wow, because you couldn't see on Snapchat how many people were following. Well,
You could see eyes. So I was on about like 20 to 25K. And then the day I was in labor was like 60K. And I was like, but this was after I gave birth. I wasn't obviously checking when I was in labor. And the next day, like, my sister had been on like, oh, Spin want to talk to you, and so many radio stations are talking about you. And I was like, why? Sure, I'm just in labor. I'm just on Snapchat. It was only afterwards when I read all the articles, like Refinery29, Cosmopolitan US, like they all wrote articles about me. And I was like, this wasn't intended, and I didn't think this was going to be a big deal. I just thought it was another day in the life of Faces by Grace.
And it's not like you had the camera filming.
Like, probably if you didn't watch it and you're listening to this, you'll think, God, she must have shown everything and anything. But it was just me like, oh, my water's broke, I'm having a contraction, we're on the way in. And it was just really just showing the journey into the delivery suite and kind of keeping people up to date on how many centimetres I was dilated. And then literally when it got to 10, he was like, right, let's do this. And I put the phone away.
And then when did you log on again?
Oh, like about half an hour after she was born. But I didn't come on. I just put a picture up to say that baby Faces, that's what I used to call my bump, has arrived, and said nothing for like a day.
And did you know she was a girl?
No, I didn't until I had her, but I didn't say anything and I didn't give her name away. I think I said it was a girl that night, maybe. I can't really remember, but I didn't say her name or show her for like a day. I wanted her to myself just for 24 hours.
Having a daughter to me was the greatest gift I've ever been given. Yeah. We found out at 20 weeks. I kind of had a feeling that it was a girl.
Yeah.
And we had a little name picked out and things like that. And then when they said it's a girl, because I don't have sisters.
Oh, okay.
So to know that I was going to have a daughter and a best friend for life.
I know.
It was just amazing.
It is. And we didn't find out. And I always, in the back of my mind, I was like, I'd love a daughter first, just because I know like the relationship I have with my mom, and just to have that myself. And then when they said, there's your baby, I was like, what is it? A girl. I was like, oh my God. My fiance was like bawling, crying. I was like, is it because it's not a boy or because I've just given birth? Like, why is he crying? He's like, I can't believe I have a daughter.
So, oh my God, it's so precious.
Yeah.
obviously life looks so perfect for bloggers. So there's yourself, Pippa O'Connor, and, you know, everything looks so glamorous. You get to go to all these gorgeous parties and, you know, do yourself up and lovely things like that. But you've always been really honest, and I think that's very important to you, is honesty.
Yeah.
And you've spoken about your struggles with mental health problems, and you say that it started before you got pregnant.
Oh yeah, it started like from birth, nearly, I'd say, but I didn't understand it. And then when I was about 17 was the first time I really was like, what's wrong? Like, why am I upset? Why do I feel this way? And I had a really tough few months where I couldn't eat and I was just really down. And like, my parents didn't know what was wrong. They took me to the doctor and got my bloods tested, and I just felt really on edge, and kind of that sick feeling in your stomach, like the first day of school nerves is what I describe my anxiety as. And it just persisted and it got worse. And then I went to the doctor and he said, well, it sounds like depression. And I said, I'm a 17-year-old girl with like a boyfriend and I'm in school and I have a job. Why am I depressed? And I didn't understand it. And I went to a counsellor for a couple of weeks and I kind of got over the really bad part. And then a couple of years later, it came back. My dad passed away when I was 20. And I thought I dealt with that okay. And obviously I was grieving, but I didn't really... like, I didn't fall apart, or I wasn't like bedridden or anything like that. I kind of just got on with it and I was there for my family. And then I went to Australia at 23, I think I was. And I thought, oh, this is like the best thing ever. And like 6 months or a year in, I started to feel bad again. And the feeling started coming back. And I thought, oh, here we go again. This is going to happen again. But my friends were like, it'd be grand. Don't think of it that way. Don't be negative. But it got so bad, like to the point where I couldn't leave the house. I couldn't do anything. And I had to come home because I was ill. Like, I was really, really sick. And it was all down to my mental health. And I kept trying to say, but I'm not physically ill. Like, there's nothing actually wrong with me. And it was at that point in Australia, I remember the day so clearly, that I realised what anxiety was and what mental health was. Because before then, I just thought, oh, sure, what's this thing? You must be mad or crazy to have something wrong with your mental health. I didn't understand it. And a friend of mine sent me a picture of this. I'll never forget the picture of a man like in a dark room. And there was a shadow over him, and it was just a real kind of eerie and scary. And it said, I am the voice in your head. I am your beating heart. I'm the one that makes you sweat. I am anxiety. And then I was like, oh my God, like, it's not me. It's my anxiety that's making me feel like this. And it was kind of the point where I could disassociate that feeling with me. It wasn't me as a person. And I kind of, yeah, I saw what it was. And then I was like, okay, then I felt better. And I said, right, I'll go home and I'll sort myself out.
Because it's nice, I suppose, because that was obviously like before anxiety was spoken about and mental health, and people would have said, sure, what's wrong with you? There's nothing wrong with you. Like, everything's perfect.
You're in Australia.
Perfect.
You're living the dream. Like, my friends would say, but it's fine. Like, you're normal. And I'd say, well, I don't feel normal and I don't feel happy and I don't feel like me. And looking at me from the outside, I'm a very outgoing, bubbly, happy person. But when I'm anxious, I'm like a different person. And I always say, like, I was a shell of myself. I was not social at all. I couldn't go out with friends. I couldn't do anything. It stripped me of grace. And I just wanted to be happy again. So I knew at that point, it was the one time where I was fully aware that something was wrong and that something needed to change. And
was that a huge decision to leave Australia? Because
massive,
I'm sure everyone knew you were away. You're probably trying to force yourself to have a good time, but deep down you knew it wasn't right.
Yeah, and it was all about giving up. I didn't want to have to give up and come home. And I think that's what was holding me back. But knowing that I wanted to feel better was more important. So my friends were talking to my family at home and I didn't know about it. So one of my friends was coming over for 6 weeks, just we were going to do the Gold Coast. And they had said, if you don't bring her home, we're going to get her, because I was that bad. So she came over and was like, oh, if you want to come home, like, I'm going home in 6 weeks. But it was obviously all planned. And I was like, yeah, okay, I think I will. So once I booked the flight, I was like, I felt more at ease and I started to feel a little bit better. And we left, we were living in Darwin, and we left Darwin to travel down and do all the islands and with Sundays and all the gorgeous places. And I thought, no, this will be grand. I'll be okay for 6 weeks. But it was the biggest mistake I've ever made because it was horrendous, like so bad. Like, obviously it was gorgeous and my friends were having a good time, but me personally was just living my worst nightmare.
So what exactly do you think was going on?
I was just in my head. Like, that's all I can describe it as. I was paranoid. I thought people were talking about me. I couldn't go into big surroundings where there was a lot of people. And I was just very in my mind, and I had let it get to the point where it had control over me instead of me controlling my thoughts. And I was still only kind of coming to terms with what was wrong and didn't understand it until I came home and then went to see people and looked into it more and read more about it. And I just remember one point in a hostel in Brisbane, and my friends were like, let's go downstairs and have dinner. And I was like, yeah, okay. And I got myself dressed and got up, and I actually couldn't physically leave the room. Like, I was backing away from them and was like trying to get back into the bunk bed. And I was like, I can't do this. And they were like, why? We're just going downstairs. So I got myself downstairs, was down there for 2 minutes. And I was like, I have to leave. And I had to go back up to the room, rang my sister who was in Ireland. She got the brunt of everything, all the phone calls in the middle of the night of me being like, I'm crazy. What's going on? And she just said, you're staying there. We had a friend of our family living over there. They had emigrated years ago. So she said, I'm ringing Karen and you're going to stay with her for a few days. So I was like, finally, I just needed someone to tell me what to do.
Somebody to just take control.
Yeah, I was so vulnerable and mm-hmm. needed, I was like a baby again. I needed someone to tell me what to do. So she just took me in and like I stayed in bed for a few days. She brought me to the doctor. I was prescribed Valium, was on Valium for like the last week of Australia, and I got home.
And then what did you do then when you got home? Did you, obviously you spoke to your mom and your family. Yeah. And
so they all knew what was going on. I wasn't hiding anything from them. They were just worried about me and wanted me to come back. So we just went straight to the doctor, and I was put on antidepressants and anti-anxiety tablets and given the number for a psychologist, and went and started to see the light again.
And how did you feel about being prescribed antidepressants? Because when I got sick, I had to go into the menopause.
Yeah.
And they said, like, obviously the side effects could be depression. And, you know, if that happens to you, we can give you a pill. We can get you through this time. And I was kind of told that just take what you need at the moment to survive. And yeah. and then down the road, we can look at it again. Is that kind of similar?
Yeah, that was the same with me. Beforehand, I would have been like, no, I don't need anything, but I was so low that anything would have helped. So I was prescribed a certain antidepressant, but it didn't sit well at all. I was like, from being so low to being so high. But I didn't see it myself, and I remember it so well because my mom said, like, you're not my Grace anymore, and like, what is, like, you're just totally different. But for me, I was like, I am the same, I'm doing the same things. But now that I look back with a clear mind, I had no emotion, I had no feelings, I had nothing. So we changed medication and I started to kind of come back down to like a normal level. But I wouldn't have been able to get up and do anything if I didn't have them. And I was only on them for, say, 4 months. And my doctor didn't want me to come off them because he said, give it 6 months and we'll see how you are. But I knew myself. I said, how can I wean myself off this? And
you trusted your gut.
I did. And I'd just met Chris. I met him. So I came home in October and I met him on New Year's Eve. So I was like, oh, no, I'll be fine. I knew I was kind of coming back to myself. So I weaned myself off. And then, yeah, I've never gone back to antidepressants. I have had anti-anxiety tablets, which have kind of been like my safety blanket when I've been really bad. And since then, I've actually found a really good therapist. And that was like 3 years ago now. And I still check in with her really regularly. And yeah, she's like my saving grace. She's helped me in more ways. I've had five, and it took me till the fifth one to actually find someone that got who I was and made me understand why I was feeling this way. And
And where do you get recommendations then for people to see?
Where did I get mine?
Did you get it from the GP?
So, the GP always recommended someone. And when I was in Australia, I looked up just a Headspace, I think it was mm-hmm. called, just for teens or young adults with mental health issues. So I went to them, but I just never clicked with anyone. And then I was feeling okay, but I wanted answers. And I came across this clinic in Stillorgan, and I just checked in with the director, and she sat down and did like a one-to-one and went back on my family history and asked me what I was feeling and why I was feeling that way. And then she pointed me in the direction of a therapist who she thought would suit me best with the needs I need or the things I needed. And I remember the first session, I was like, no, here we go again. This one's not going to work. And yeah, 3 years later, and I was with her yesterday, and it's like sitting down with a friend. She knows everything about me and I don't hold back anything, and it's so nice.
It's almost the best gift you can give to yourself to go to someone and talk for an hour and they don't judge you and they
no
don't know.
No judgment. Yeah, and I always thought, like, it's so expensive. And then when I got to the point where I just wanted help and I wanted to mind myself, I thought I wouldn't think twice about getting my hair done, or I wouldn't think twice about the pair of boots I wanted. So, like, that €80 every 2 weeks is money, the best money I can spend, because it's on myself and it's on my mind, and it makes me a better person and a stronger person, and it makes me deal with situations that I wouldn't have been able to cope with back in the day.
Because I am seeing a counsellor at the moment, and like you, you know, I wouldn't hesitate to spend the money on clothes or healthy food or going out for dinner with my friends. And then I was realizing that I had problems with food to do, you know, with cancer. And I was so worried about everything I was eating. And I was in with my counselor one day and I said, you know, I had a pizza and I felt so guilty afterwards. And I was worried that people were judging me because I just recovered from cancer. And why would I be eating a pizza? Yeah. And she said, well, the stress that you're holding in your body from that is probably doing you more damage
than the pizza.
So realizing stuff like that, and, you know, learning coping mechanisms with releasing stress is the best investment you could make within your body.
Yeah.
With healthy food, going to the gym, also learning coping mechanisms, I think, are so important too.
So important. I've learned how to be the person I wanted to be. But she always said to me, like, I'm not going to fix you. I'm just going to guide you. And she does. And sometimes I need to check back in after, say, 3 months, because I forget what she's already taught me. Like, it's not something that will happen overnight. And you don't just get better. You constantly have to work on yourself. And yeah, I think those coping mechanisms, and sometimes it just takes someone one thing to tell you, like, that's why you're feeling that way, or this is how you cope, or as easy as, like, the pizza's not doing as much damage as the stress and anxiety of thinking about eating the pizza is. And then you're like, oh yeah. And you just need that, like, light bulb moment sometimes for them to say, like, it's okay. And yeah, that's what I just think is the best benefit from going to see her.
So then you met Chris, and I think it's obvious you're mad about him.
Yeah.
He makes you laugh. He seems like a really nice guy.
Yeah, he is. He's just the kind of guy I wanted to find. And I hoped there was one of them out there somewhere. And when I met him, I was really low and I was on my medication. And I was like, I wasn't me, but he still loved me then. And I used to be able to, I'd have to tell him, like, oh, I can't drink much because I'm on antibiotics or something like that. Because I didn't want to say, like, oh, I'm on antidepressants, I'm anxious and I'm a basket case. So I just kind of said, oh, he didn't ask questions. And then I remember we were only seeing each other a couple of weeks, and I did a video for my YouTube channel about my mental health and anxiety, not knowing or not thinking that he'd see it. And he texts me and he was like, oh my God, like, fair play. Firstly, I didn't know you were a YouTuber. And secondly, I didn't know you. So I kind of got it all out there on the table, and he just accepted me. And yeah, I always say he saved me, and he pulled me back from whatever path I was going down.
Because I think when you have a baby, like, Jamie's the same for me, like, he's my absolute soulmate. Yeah. And we have the crack together. But I think when you become parents, it's almost like you turn into, like, co-workers, and you're managing something. Like, you're managing a household all of a sudden, instead of just coming home on a Friday and, like, chatting about the week. Now it's like, where's this? What are we doing tomorrow?
What are you doing now?
It's so intense.
Yeah.
And one of my New Year's resolutions actually is to put more effort into my relationship and to give Jamie more time, because obviously Pia takes up all of our time. And then last year I was really focused on myself and, you know, surviving cancer and also giving time and loving myself. And that was a huge part of my life last year. But part of my life this year that I really want to make an effort is with us, and just to do things as a family, because I think life is just so hectic.
It is. And days go by, and you, if you don't give it the time and respect a relationship needs, it'll just fizzle, and you don't, see it happening. So you do need to give it that time and check in. And like sometimes you forget to be affectionate towards one another because you're frantic with the washing and feeding the baby and changing and like going places that sometimes you're like, God, we haven't had a kiss today, or it's little things like that. And I think that's so important as well, because you do forget when someone else comes, like with a baby, they're so important that they take up all your time.
And I think as a mom, and now you're going to have another baby, like my house is full on chaos and I have one kid. So I cannot imagine what it's going to be like for you when another one comes along. But what an absolute blessing.
Yeah, I'm so excited. And for us, I think we've just come out of the chaos. I was just saying to you earlier that it does get better and they get like on their feet and they manage a little bit better the older they get. And now I'm going back to square one. But I think that this time around it'll be different. We were living in an apartment and then we moved in with my mom. So we never really had our own space. And we've bought a house last year. And I'm just so looking forward to like being at home and just like, I can't wait for that first day to come home to our own house and just be a family of four.
And how's Sienna with the news? Is she excited?
Yeah, she's excited. I don't know if she knows that there's actually going to be another person there. Like she knows that there's a baby in mommy's belly, but I don't know how she'll cope when someone new comes into the house, because she's a very much a mommy's girl and she's always by my side and I can't do anything without her. So I don't know how she'll manage when I'm not on call 24/7. But
I think she could be a super helper.
Yeah.
But she will obviously need those extra kind of cuddles and things like that.
Yeah, so.
You have a huge community online. It's over 150,000 people on Instagram, which is just insane.
I know.
How do you deal with that many people watching you?
So I always, whenever anyone asks me this, I always explain it like I don't think about that amount of people. I think about maybe a small group, 100 people of like girls at a masterclass, say, that are just my followers. I never actually think like on a daily, there could be 70,000 people watching my story. And if I think about it that way, then I think I'd be scared and like I'd hold back more. But I don't. I just imagine a small group of people who watch every day.
Do you think that's why people love you? Because you get on with no makeup on and you're normal?
Yeah, I think so. I like that a lot of people say I'm relatable, or if I meet any of my followers, they say that, oh, I feel like I know you so well. And I love that because I want them to feel that way. And I started Snapchat with no makeup on and I am that person. I barely have makeup on today and I just feel comfortable that way, and I don't have the time to do myself up to come on. I want to be like as instant as possible. Like it is all about being in the moment, and I want to be that. I don't want to take time and effort because then I would take away from who I am as a person. And I think people like relatability. They like to see people in a messy house with their hair in a bun and no makeup on, because that's normal.
And do you get, like, would you get negative comments if, say, for example, there was a pile of washing in the background and things weren't perfect? Like, would people comment on that?
Not that I've seen. I usually just go to the clean side of the house, the clean room. Someone messaged me recently. I was doing like a little homeware haul and they were like, how do you keep your house so clean? Like you have a baby and you're at home all the time and you're busy. And I literally turned the camera from here where it was all lovely to there where there was a pile of washing, like a stack of laundry. And I was like, this is just the clean side. Like you don't see the rest of it. And I amn't the tidiest person. Like I let things build up like any normal person does. So yeah, it's funny that people think like what you see is, they actually think that's always real, whereas I like to show the other side of things as well.
Yeah, and I do think that's why so many people relate to you, because you are real. Do you find there's negativity out there?
Yeah, a lot more now than there ever was before, and I don't cope very well with that. Like I do take a lot of it to heart, and I am the type of person that cares what people think. So when I hear or read negativity, it really gets to me. But I've tried over the last couple of years to not let it get in on me as much as I have, as it has, because my therapist said what people say about you is none of your business. And it's so true. And if people try to tell me, I'm like, I don't want to know. Let them talk. But I don't want to know what they're saying unless it's something that I need to know.
Mm-hmm. And how do you detach yourself from that, just by not kind of going looking for it.
Yeah, I used to look and I used to read, and it's very hard because sometimes they're sent personally to me, and it's very hard to not read an email. That's like starts off horrible because you want to know what they're saying. But yeah, I just delete now.
I think people forget that bloggers like yourself and Suzanne Jackson like are reading things and have feelings and are normal people just like the rest of us.
Yeah, and I'm just a girl who started talking to her camera. As mad as that sounds, I just picked it up one day and I didn't expect to grow as much as I have or it to be my full-time career. Obviously, I wanted it to, but it was at the point where it wasn't really a career and people weren't doing this full-time. And now I'm like, I'm still that girl. Like, I still have feelings and I am a sensitive soul. Like, if someone says something to me, friends, family, or someone online, like, I take it to heart and I let it eat away at me and I think about it constantly. But I've tried over the years to not let it as much. But like recently there was something and I just had to delete all my accounts.
Did you?
Deactivated Instagram. Yeah, and I took a week off and that was the first time I've taken a break in like 4 years.
And what was that like then coming back? Did you feel kind of refreshed? Or?
Well, I actually didn't say anything about it. I just kind of went away. And when I came back, I did have like a new, it was like I felt refreshed and I felt like I wanted to do it again differently. And I don't put as much time into other things. I kind of focus everything now on Instagram.
You seem to really kind of listen to yourself. You have this kind of inner voice, like the inner voice told you to come back from Australia.
Yeah.
You know, you kind of mind yourself, don't you?
Yeah, I do. And sometimes I do look for reassurance. We all do. But I know that I have to listen to my gut and whatever it's telling me to go with. But then other times, I don't know, I need my mom or I need Chris or my sister to tell me, like, oh no, that's not the right thing to do. Or if I do something that's not right, I just have to learn from the mistakes and think, well, what have I learned from that? And I'll do it differently this time. So when I came back this time around, I think I was about 12 weeks pregnant. And obviously with the stress of being pregnant and tired and emotional, I just was like, this negativity isn't as important as minding me and minding my baby. So I was like, right, I'll just get rid of it. And it felt so nice for a week. No phone in my hand, not even having the apps to check in on because it's my full-time job. And other than that, like social media is overwhelming sometimes. And it's like, it's what we do these days. And we constantly have a phone in our hand. So that was the point where I was like, no, something has to give. And me and the baby are more important than reading negativity or having people say things. And they didn't know what was going on. Like, I couldn't say, listen, I'm pregnant. Leave me alone.
Wow, that's unbelievable. Because people are just so quick to tweet mean things or look for the negative, I think, is the way. And I actually did that last week on Saturday night. My phone was charging in the other room and I was wrecked. I was actually too tired to go get up and get it.
Yeah.
But after like 40 minutes, I was like, oh my God, this is amazing.
Yeah.
So I think that's what I'm going to do now on Saturday nights is sit down and leave my phone in another room just to give myself a break.
Yeah.
I feel guiltiest when Pia takes my phone out of my hand.
Sienna said it to me the other day. The first time she was like, Mammy, put the phone down. And I was like, okay, this something has to give now. And there's an app or there's a feature on iPhone now that you can turn off your phone from working. You'll get phone calls and stuff. It's just like screen time or something like that. So I've started to do that in the new year. And I limit the amount of time I spend on social media as well.
That's a really good tip. I never knew about that.
It's so good, but it shows you how much you've used it. And that's scary.
It's hard to kind of face that reality.
Yeah, and it tells you how many times you picked it up in a day.
Oh, God. No. Jesus.
But it does help from, like, I set mine from 10 at night till 7 in the morning where I can't use it. Obviously, you can, like, deactivate it. Mm-hmm. But it kind of, you're faced with this little timer that says, no, you're limited or you've been locked out. And you have to decide whether it's important enough to go in or not.
That is such a good tip. I think loads of people are going to start doing that this year. Tell me a little bit about your wedding, if I'm allowed to ask.
Well, there's not much to tell. We decided this summer that we wanted to try for a baby and put the wedding off an extra year because we just thought it would be nice to have a baby close to Siena, and all of my friends are getting married over the next 2 years, so we're not getting married till 2021.
Okay.
The summer of 2021. Nothing is confirmed. We haven't really decided on anything. I know what I want, but we haven't even viewed anywhere yet. So, yeah.
I love your early morning Instagrams when you get up, when it's so quiet, yeah. Your house, there's no one else awake. How do you get the motivation to get up before your child?
Like, I've always been a morning person, but I don't like lying in bed if I'm awake. I just can't sit still. And even this morning, I woke at 6 and Sienna was in the bed, at the end of the bed. Chris was just awake. His alarm had gone off. And I just felt like, okay, it's morning. And he was like, are you getting up? And I said, yeah. And he was like, all right. And he thinks I'm mad because he loves staying in bed and he loves sleeping. Whereas the minute I wake, I'm like, okay, let's start the day. And I much prefer when I'm on my own in the morning because I can get up, throw a wash on, make my coffee, sit, do whatever I need to do.
And are you kind of arranging your thoughts? Like, obviously, this podcast is about self-care, and this is one of your self-care techniques, is to get up before anybody else and have a bit of me time.
Yeah.
So are you just kind of going through what you're going to do for the day and kind of coming to terms with everything you have to do?
Yeah. And I feel like my thoughts are a lot clearer in the morning. Like, I've just had, say, 8 hours sleep, so I'm refreshed. Whereas if I tried to have me time in the evenings, I'd be so tired that I'd be like, oh no, I just want to sleep. So you don't really check in with yourself. So my time, I'm really deep in the morning. Like, if you hear me on Insta stories, sometimes I'm talking about the maddest things, but it's because I have a clearer mind, and I just enjoy that little bit of peace and quiet because the rest of the day is hectic.
How else do you look after yourself?
Oh, I always look after myself, loads of ways. I always try and listen to myself the most and check in with myself. And I, like, there could be days where every day I'm anxious or I might have a panic attack. But I don't look at that in a negative. I think that's kind of a sign to check in and take things a little bit slower. So I'll sit down and I'll think, why am I feeling like this? And then I might have a bath or go for a walk, listen to some music, go treat myself to get my nails done, like little things like that. Having a coffee on my own for half an hour, like they're like the little things that kind of focus you. And I think because we live in such a fast-paced world now and everything is so busy and we're constantly on the go, that just sitting in quiet peace sometimes is so refreshing and it can recharge your batteries. And even if I just lie there sometimes and meditate, I love turning on calm or some relaxing music or doing a body scan meditation. I just feel so much better.
I think in life, like, there's so many, like, self-care is such a big thing that sometimes I'm like, oh my God, it's been 5 days and I haven't meditated. Oh Jesus Christ, I better do some meditation. And yeah, you sit down. But I suppose to set yourself realistic goals. So yeah, if you're just meditating even for 3 minutes a day, yeah, just take that moment.
And don't be hard on yourself if you don't do it. Like, don't say, right, I want to meditate now for the next 30 days. And then a week has gone by and you're like, God, I said that a week ago and I haven't done it. Like, don't be hard on yourself. Like, be kind to yourself. And just a small thing like sitting in the car an extra 10 minutes and just chilling before you go into the madhouse sometimes, or like going to the bathroom and staying a little bit longer. I think sometimes when you just take a few minutes to come back down and be present, like, can do you the world of good when you've been on the go all day.
And obviously you have a very strong support network.
Yeah.
For to allow you to do that. So you have Chris and your mum and they
everyone helps. And sometimes it gets to the point where I'm nearly like beyond coming back, and that's when I have a panic attack. But if I catch it just beforehand, I say to Chris, I just need a few minutes. And he's like, yeah, fire away.
So because I suppose they've been with you on your entire journey, they know that you need, they respect that you need time to yourself.
Yeah, and sometimes it can come across rude. Like, I'd say to my sister, like, stop for a minute. Like, things are getting too much for me. But she knows now. And she doesn't need to ask, am I okay? She just lets me do what I need to do. If I need to go upstairs in my mom's house and lie down for a few minutes and take a few deep breaths, like we were out for her graduation recently and I was like, oh, I don't feel well, but they thought I didn't feel well because of the baby. And I was like, no, my head doesn't feel well. And they're like, okay, you can leave, like, just do what you need to do. And it's not in a rude way. It's so I don't get to the point where I have a panic attack, because there was days where I'd have multiple panic attacks a day. And like, things just got so bad that now that I have the tools, I have to use them to stop me from going that way.
And what do you say to people who may be suffering in silence, who are listening to this podcast and are like, that's me. Oh, my yeah. God, that's me. That's what I do. But I don't. Nobody knows.
Yeah. Or they weren't aware of it until you hear someone else saying things. I do talks all the time to schools and colleges, and people come up after and say, I didn't realise that's what I was feeling and that's why I was feeling that way. Until I heard you saying something that triggered something in my mind to make me realise that's the way I was. But I always say to talk to somebody and to have someone. It doesn't have to be in your family. It can be a friend or a professional. Like, you just need to get it off your mind and even write it down. And sometimes my mind is going a million miles an hour and I can't think straight. So I go into my office, I get out a notebook, I write down whatever thoughts I'm having, whatever's racing in my mind, write it all down. If I can deal with it and do something about it, I accept it. If not, I say it out loud and I laugh and I tear up the page. Because most of the time, the thoughts you have are negative, crazy thoughts, and you listen to them thoughts, and that's what sets you up for a panic attack or feeling overwhelmed. So if I say it out loud, either to myself in a room or to Chris, and he says, that's ridiculous, that'll never happen, or don't be so silly, don't worry about that, then I have that reassurance. But sometimes you need to reassure yourself. So saying it out loud and thinking, God, that's a mad thought, why am I thinking that? And then laugh about it or rip it up. They're some of the things I do. Or just talk to somebody. I talk to everyone. I talk to Instagram, I talk to the wall. But I think the biggest thing is talking and being aware of why you're feeling that way and what's triggering it. And sometimes you don't know, and that's okay too, because a lot of the time we don't know why things are happening or what's going on until you speak to a professional who can give you the guidance and advice.
It's really good advice. Talk to me about now going in to have your second baby. Are you putting yourself under pressure that, like, maybe you should, like, do some Instagrams in the labour ward?
I'll have a film crew in. I'm going to keep doing what I do, but no, I'll just see how it goes on the day. Like, you know what it's like the day you're in labour, you don't know what's going to happen. But I am going to share it all again.
Because you obviously have a lot of young mums turning to you for advice, because myself, I had a baby 2 years ago, little Pia, and she was the absolute love of my life the moment she was born. But it's the hardest job I've ever done.
Getting her out?
Just being a mom, yeah. And like trying to juggle things. And
both were hard for me.
I was lucky. I had a C-section, so it wasn't so bad. But being a mum is tough going. The days are long. Now, luckily, my mum lives up the road, so I was always walking over to her house. And Pia was born in February, so it was coming into the summer. Like, yeah. It was a really nice time. But the days are long when you're with your newborn baby and your husband's back at work. Like, it's hard going.
I know. And I found the best thing when I had Sienna was to just get back into the real world. I didn't stay indoors and I didn't shut myself off from the world. And I do miss that I didn't get to lie in my jammies all day and just nurse her. But I wanted to be able to go to the shops, get in the car, find where the feeding rooms were in the shopping centres, all before Chris went back to work. And he was like, God, you're grand. I can go back now without a worry, instead of just staying at home for the 2 weeks of his like leave and then trying to figure out everything on my own. So I just did it. I got up and I was excited to go out and walk her. Like, I couldn't wait to push my buggy with a baby in it, because you'd had it there in the house for a few weeks before you have her. So, yeah, I think just getting back out and not being afraid to do things. Like, I still did absolutely everything with her that I did before I had her.
And that's why she's such a little social baby now. And you can bring her anywhere, because she's just, it's always been that way. Can I talk to you a little bit about skin and your healthy habits? Because your skin is flawless. It's what you started out, you know, Faces by Grace. This is like where you came from.
Yeah.
So obviously this podcast is called The Good Glow and it's about, you know, glowing, but it's important, I suppose, to glow from the inside and look after your skin that way.
Yeah, absolutely. And I've always been into skin. And I think that was my way of kind of my self-care back in the early days, was looking after my skin and pampering myself at night. And none of my friends ever had a skincare routine when we were 17, and I did. I loved it, and that's where the passion and the obsession with skincare and beauty and makeup came from. But it's always just been part of my routine, like my nightly routine. If I don't get to cleanse and put on my serums and my mask and whatever it is, I just don't feel relaxed. And I said to Christy the other night, I had a shower and I did my body cream and I did all my beauty bits, and I just said, I feel so much better now. I feel like I can just go to sleep, and it's my way of relaxing.
So do you do a full like body moisturize before you go to bed and your face?
Not every night. Like, okay. I'm not as good with my body as I am with my face.
Yeah, yeah.
But I would every night and every morning have a skincare routine. And it changes, and I mix different products and I try different things. And thankfully, my skin is really good at taking to different products. And that's the way I can kind of review things and talk about different things. I don't have a strict skincare routine. I know Jennifer Rock, the skin nerd, would say that I need to just stick to the same things. But I always just try new things and incorporate different products into my skincare routine, and it just feels like a facial every day.
Yeah, like looking at you here now, like your skin is flawless and it glows, you know, it's gorgeous.
I have a product on it there now. It's a really nice one. It's a BB serum or BB CC serum by Terry, and it is just like glow in a bottle. It's the good glow.
You look amazing.
Thank you.
You need to give it to me. Talk to me about 2019. Obviously, everyone's talking about new year, new you. What's on the agenda for the year? Like, what are your goals for 2019?
I always say I don't agree with new year, new you, because it's always going to be the same you, just a better version. So this year, I want to work on myself more so, and minding my mind and looking after my time better as well. Like, I work for myself and I'm a full-time mom and I'm going to have a second baby. So I just want to make sure that I manage my time better, have a little bit more routine, because from the last couple of years, I've had no routine. So that's the biggest thing, is looking after my time management.
And you obviously have so many people reaching out to you about mental health because you've been so open with it and you've so many followers. So is there a way, I suppose, that you can speak to them?
Yeah, I actually am planning an event in early spring. I'm going to do a mindful event on mental health. It's going to be Mind Your Mind. It's still in the early stages of planning, but I think it's going to be really good, and it's going to focus a lot on self-care and mindfulness and looking after yourself. So we might have you along, Georgie.
Oh, I'd love to. I think it's so important, though. I mean, we go to these events about fashion and makeup, and that's a great day out and such a fun day. But it's also, I think there is a need for these sort of events that people can go to and get a lot out of.
Yeah, and I've been to different wellness events and I've felt empowered after and motivated and inspired. And it also kind of sometimes hits a nerve where you need to reflect and think, oh, maybe I need to take some of those steps and do a few of those things that they're talking about. So yeah, I've wanted to do my own for years and never really put it into practice. So 2019, there's definitely going to be some mental health events with me.
Oh my God, that's so exciting. Thanks for sharing that news on the podcast.
Yeah.
That
is haven't said it anywhere else yet.
That's so exciting, and best of luck with it. And thank you from the bottom of my heart for the support and for reaching out to me, because last year when I was at home sick and just hearing from people, and I said it last week on my podcast with Claire Solan, like just people reaching out, and it goes a long way. So thank you so much for the support that you showed me, and I'm sure you support a lot of your followers because I'm sure you're getting messages all the time.
Yeah, and I think sometimes knowing that there is, when you have a voice or someone DMs you, it's like nice to see a face and a name and a bit of a message as opposed to just a number. You know that there are real people and that you're touching people, and that's what you did as well. And you opened up to everyone, and that's what it's all about, is making people feel better through, even if you have to share the bad, it just makes people feel a little bit better knowing that there's other people that are going through the same thing that you're going through. And that's why I opened up about mental health as well. And I'm sure that was one of the reasons you opened up about your treatment and illness, just to look for support, but to help other people.
And that's the amazing side of social media, isn't it?
Yeah, that's the best part of it.
And that's the part that we should all be talking about.
Yeah. Yeah, not the negativity.
Thank you so much for coming in today.
This was so nice.
Thanks for listening to the Good Glow podcast. Please subscribe so you can be the first to hear about new episodes. And if you enjoyed the podcast, please leave a review. You can check out thegoodglow.ie for more on my story and follow me on Instagram @GeorgieJCrawford.